You're listening to Comedy Central.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Professor Glaude, welcome to the Daily Social Distancing Show.
It's my pleasure. It's my pleasure.
First of all, can I just say how impressed I am that you're at home, but you're rocking that suit like you are in a studio somewhere. It's really impressive.
You know, if you ask me to stand up, it'll be a different question, but I appreciate that.
People always ask me about the books that are behind me here, and yours has been here almost from the very beginning, I think. You write about race, and you write about America's stories and the stories it tells itself about race. James Baldwin is notorious for being a writer who wrote and spoke his mind, and in many ways taps into the consciousness of what it means to be Black in America. Your new book delves into his life, but it's part biography, part analyzing, you know, his writing and how it applies to what we're going through today. In all the time since those books have been written, has anything changed?
Well, you know, Baldwin has this wonderful line, America's always changing, but America never changes. There's this sense that the country is dynamic, but there's this ongoing through line. And this through line is the value gap that I mentioned in Democracy in Black, and that is this belief that white people matter more than others. And that belief evidences itself, Trevor, in our habits and our dispositions and our practices. And then we tell a whole host of lies to protect those beliefs, right? And so even as we change, you know, having Barack Obama as the president is not the same as being in Jim Crow, which is not the same as being enslaved. But the through line is white people are valued more than others. And so that's what Baldwin understood. And I think he's our most insightful writer about democracy and race in this country. And I think that's why his work is like an evergreen. But what I do in this book is I focus on the latter work, the later writings. And that's what's unsettling a lot of people.
This is stuff that was written, so it was out there. But it really seems to unsettle people when you delve into Baldwin's work and almost delve into what it means. Why do you think it's so unsettling?
The later Baldwin is a Baldwin that's trying to come to terms with America's betrayal. Most folks say he's bitter, he's angry, his rage has overwhelmed his art. But Baldwin is trying to come to terms with the fact that the country has assassinated Martin Luther King Jr. He's collapsed. In 1969, he tries to commit suicide. Failed relationship. The country is on the road to not only electing Richard Nixon, but it's on the road to electing Ronald Reagan. And for many people, they don't understand Ronald Reagan was as notorious as George Wallace for Black folk in this country. And so I was interested in Baldwin, who was trying to make sense of our trauma, our pain, our wound, trying to pick up the pieces in the face of America's betrayal. And here we are in our moment after Barack Obama's presidency, and then the vitriol of the Tea Party, voter suppression and voter ID laws. And then we vomited up Donald Trump. And right. I was trying to deal with my own despair and disillusionment. And so I turned to him in that moment.
Was there even a glimpse of hope in Baldwin's work? Was there something you looked at where you said, wow, okay, at least that's changed, or that's gotten better, or this is one part of life for a Black person in America that has maybe not held up in the texts? Or is it just pretty much prophetic and also at the same time relevant?
Yeah, I found hope. You know, I had to, because one of the things I was trying to do is to figure out how did he manage his rage and his faith in us? Right? How could he be angry and still have hold on to the belief that we could still build a new Jerusalem. And there's this wonderful line he dropped in 1970, man. He said, hope is invented every day. And, you know, that idea of hope being invented every day in the context of one having to battle for one's life, having to struggle just to find the space to smile, the space to just simply imagine that tomorrow could be better. You have to invent hope in that context. And it's that becomes the precondition for you to join the battle again. Even when he embraced the anger and rage of Black Power, he never gave up the question that the claim that it was a moral issue at its heart. Right. And so at the end of the day, he wants to insist that we be true to ourselves, that we tell the truth about what we've done so that we can free ourselves into imagining being together differently. And as an artist and a poet, he tried to make that as clear as possible and as powerful and provocative as possible.
Let me ask you about this. One thing I pick up in Baldwin's writing is he oftentimes feels almost guilty that he's living in France for a certain amount of time where he's away from the strife of his fellow Black American. And he acknowledges that he's living a better life as a Black American in France. What's interesting is I remember Black Americans who would come to South Africa, and although apartheid was happening, they would comment on how they weren't subjected to the same racist laws as Black South Africans were. And it's a really interesting dynamic where it feels like if Black people go to a country where they don't have a history in that country, the people in that country seem to get along with them easier or in a different way. Do you think part of it goes back to what Baldwin was saying about the guilt and the burden of that guilt? Is that when people don't have to deal with the history of what peoples have done to other peoples, they can then engage in a forward-looking discussion?
You know, I think Baldwin always grappled with survivor's guilt, right? He watched Medgar get murdered. He watched Malcolm get murdered and Sammy Young and Jimmy Lee Jackson. And he saw so many of his young friends from Howard and Fisk, their eyes darkened. So he wanted to write about all of those who did not survive and those who survived but who were broken. But he needed the space. You know, when I was in Heidelberg, I was in Heidelberg for an hour, and I saw four white police officers with their knees in the back of a Black man who was screaming at the top of his lungs, help. I wasn't in Heidelberg for an hour. But the thing is that I didn't have to comment on it. I didn't have to account for it. Right. In some ways, I could go back to my flat and breathe. It was like a moment when I was way out of the country, I could exhale, you know, because I wasn't their Black problem. You know, I was walking around with my American passport. You know?
Right. Right.
And then when I was I gave lectures at the University of the North. When I was there, I wasn't there. You know what I mean? I looked like folk, but I wasn't their Negroes. Hmm. You get the point? And so you get the space to breathe. And so Baldwin would leave the country in order to think more carefully about it. Because when you're here, you have to navigate so much of this nonsense. And he left America in 1948 because he said, if I don't get out of this country, I'm either going to kill somebody or I'm going to be killed. So right here on Route 1, right here in Princeton, New Jersey, in Lawrenceville, a waitress refused to serve him, and he hurled a glass at her head and shattered the glass behind her, and then had to run for his life. He knew the rage and anger was consuming him. He was becoming his stepfather. So when he chose Paris, he had the space to actually create himself, to will himself into being a writer. Sometimes that's all we need is the space to breathe so that we can be, man.
What is the one thing you hope that they will get from this? Or if somebody says to you, Professor, why would I want to read this book? What is the one thing you hope to give them in this new analysis of Baldwin's life?
Yeah, I mean, at the heart of it is the through line that we have to tell the truth and stand, be courageous enough to tell the truth. And once we tell the truth about what we've done and who we are, then we can free ourselves into imagining a different world and imagining ourselves differently. We're shackled by categories. We're shackled by our lies. We're trapped in this fantasy. You know, America thinks of itself as as Never Never Land. It's always, you know, we're full of lost boys and lost girls. We don't want to be responsible and held accountable for anything. So we have to tell the truth. And here we are in a moment of moral reckoning where the country can be otherwise. But every single time we try to give birth to a new nation, the umbilical cord of white supremacy is wrapped around its neck. So we have to tell truth. We have to be truthful and be really responsible midwives so that we can give birth finally to a new country that is a genuinely multiracial democracy. Our history says we're not going to do very well, but I have faith because wherever human beings are, again, we have a chance.
There is always hope. Professor Claude, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you, Doc. I appreciate you.
The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, Ears Edition. Subscribe to The Daily Show on YouTube for exclusive content and stream full episodes anytime on Paramount Plus.
Hey, everyone. This is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.